Good Wednesday morning to you. It's the Morning Roundup live here on 99.9 The Rock. Baylen Height, Derek Decker. Derek in studio today as well. Always a pleasure when we get Derek in the house. Makes it feel a little more real. Like I'm not just talking into a void, into a computer. Probably the same for you over there as well, Derek. We got a lot to talk about, though. Kansas and Kansas State go round two last night. Quick high school basketball recap. Sean Payton, now the projected head coach for the Denver Broncos. And we had some breaking news this morning as well. Not sure how many of you are that deeply enthralled with this, but Tom Brady officially announcing his retirement on Twitter.
Again.
Via video. Again. Yes, we should preface again for Mr. TB12. Is this the end, Derek?
Maybe. I mean, he's going to get paid by Fox, right? So he's going to go broadcast. And right, that's the conditional deal that they've got. And maybe he can pick up some of the slack where Tony Romo's been leaving off at CBS.
Or maybe just CBS just drops Romo and picks up Tom Brady. I mean,
I'd be down for that.
I'm over Tony Romo.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Let's do it, yeah.
Okay, to me, and this is kind of the way I saw it put the other day, the lack of preparation shows up after he got paid. Because before he got paid, a couple things at play. Number one, he's been out of the league longer, so he doesn't know the guys as much. Like, he didn't play with as many guys in the league. And the strategies have changed. So you have some offensive schemes that are different that didn't exist when he was in the league. So when he had that uncanny ability to just magically call out plays and predict them before they happen, now he doesn't have that anymore, so he doesn't have that to fall on. So he just speaks and, you know, I don't know, Jim.
I don't know.
And that's all he says. And, like, there's no real... Like, and then I didn't see him that much. So let me just say this. Like, you see him on the national games every week, and just knowing, going and thinking about the Colts game. So he gets assigned a Colts game against the Chiefs, obviously has the Chiefs all the time. I think Jim said that was their first Colts game in a couple of years.
Yep. Which Colts traditionally don't have a lot of primetime games, so
no.
That makes sense.
And it wasn't even, that was a 1 o'clock game, and it just happened to be, that was the best one on CBS that day. Anyway, they walk in there, and, you know, Jim's a consummate professional. This guy's pro. Nobody ever complains about Jim Nantz for the most part. And Tony Romo, like, gave basically zero insights into what the Colts were doing. It felt like he was completely unprepared. But again, I just think that he's lost that lightning in a bottle magic that he had at the start. And there wasn't anybody else really to compare it to. Anybody else new? Now you've got Greg Olsen.
Oh,
and
Greg Olsen, awesome.
He's awesome. He steps
awesome,
in.
Awesome.
Him and KB. And I got to tell you, Kevin Burkhardt, he talked to one of my college classes. Terrific guy. Just an awesome down-to-earth guy. But he's a great play-by-play guy, especially for football. I like him and everything. And I appreciate Fox stepping out and taking the chance, rolling the dice a little bit, moving away from a very proven duo in Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, that have done a great job on ESPN. They've made Monday Night Football very watchable again. It's been nice to see Monday Night Football back to, you know, you're not thinking about the broadcasters all the time. But now KB and Greg Olsen, very rewarding that they get a Super Bowl this year. And I think they deserve it. And, you know, that has nothing to do with them. It's just about TV contracts. But it's nice to see Greg Olsen getting rewarded early in his career with the Super Bowl, because he's got a chance to be the top analyst for the game going forward.
I think he should be. Former tight end there, Greg Olsen. And I saw a tweet over the weekend as well when the games were on, saying that Fox, or CBS rather, was hoping that Tony Romo would be everything Greg Olsen is for Fox, because Greg Olsen teaches the game, but he doesn't throw it in your face, right? He doesn't say, you know, oh, you know, there's no theatrics. It's just, here's what's happening. Here's how it was set up. And he makes it fun. I've learned so much watching football because of Greg Olsen this past year.
Right.
About the intricacies of an offense, or maybe what a defense is trying to do, versus the Tony Romo. You turn it on and it's like, mute.
Yeah.
And it's sad because you've got Jim Nantz, who's,
pro.
Legendary broadcaster.
Maybe one of the best ever.
And I think Jim Nantz is kind of getting sick of it too, because I'm not sure if you were listening to the end of the Chiefs game, but there was the final comments. Obviously, Travis Kelce comes on and steals the mic, and, you know, Burrowhead, what? Burrow, you know, all that. And Tony Romo goes, what do you call it? Burrowland? Burrowhead? Is Jim Nantz is trying to throw the outro and send it back to the studio. And you can hear Jim Nantz just go, yep. Like, yep. And that's it for Tony Romo. I'm Jim Nantz. Burrowhead? What'd you call it? Burrowland? It's like, how had he not, had he really not seen all week long? And you talk about the preparation, so maybe, but did he really all week long not see Arrowhead called Burrowhead once?
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, and I know very careful what I'm saying here. Like it avoids people like change in broadcasting, and he does not roll by a traditional style. You know, he just kind of interjects himself and takes the show, which TV is set up for the analyst to be the show, and that's totally fine. And every play-by-play guy knows that, and that's cool. But he still can't be a distraction to the play-by-play guy. Like, he just, and still, and he's experienced enough in this business now. Again, when you're lightning in the bottle and you're making play predictions and stuff, nobody really has a problem that you're talking over Jim Nantz. Now he just interjects himself as Jim's trying to set up or call the play, and, you know, Tony just screams something out of nowhere. It's just annoying. It just has gotten, and it's amazing how quickly that's changed, right? Because
the tone changed quick.
Yes, because I, along with everybody else, was like, okay, he's a fun listen. I think he's a little over the top. He's not necessarily my cup of tea, but he's a fun listen, and he knows what he's talking about, and he preps his rear end off. And all that's gone away since he got paid. Money does that to people.
Yeah, it certainly does. You see, you see it. You see it in quarterback play. You see it in coaching. And we're going to talk about money and kind of a situation going on in Denver a little bit later on in the show, obviously, with Sean Payton making the jump out to be the next head coach reported of the Denver Broncos. But our first story this morning, after we finish off with our Tony Romo, you know, little opening there, which it needed to happen. I've had that conversation with probably 10 different people since Sunday, and so it only makes sense that we're finally sitting here talking about it. Looking at Kansas and Kansas State last night, Kansas able to pop a revenge game against K-State at home. I think Kevin McCullough, for me, was a difference. 16 points, 13 rebounds, much better this go-around. In order to beat K-State, you've got to be able to rebound the basketball, especially on the offensive glass. Kansas was able to do that. And I think that home crowd probably allowed KU to stay out in front just a little bit, control the tempo. 11 threes helps that as well. Derek, I'll ask you this question. Did anything in this game change the way you feel about either team?
Yes, it did. I think Kansas has solidified themselves and quelled some of my concerns that they're a legitimate contender. I'm not going to say, hey, they're going to win the league, but I think they could win the league. And there's a few games in there, you know, the last 2 weeks where I said, this looks like a team that could finish in the middle of the pack. I mean, you know, with such a competitive conference. But I think they're legit. K-State, I think, to me, kind of got what I expected. Maybe we're getting to a point where they're starting to regress to the mean a little bit. They have not been good on the road. There's no way around that. And I know, I understand the environment last night, rivalry game and all that, like, you know, 2,000 over capacity last night. So that's a lot to say. But let me just say that I think K-State has gotten some good wins, and it's a great start to the league, and they've been, without question, the best storyline in the league this year. But are they legitimate Big 12 contenders? I don't know if you can say that, because you have to win on the road in this league, in any league. To win the conference, you got to be able to win on the road. And K-State has not shown the ability to do that against good teams. We'll also mention about this game last night. I said before yesterday, I was like, hey, I hope there's not 49 fouls. Well, there were 46, and the two teams combined to take, 71 free throws. No flow past the first 10 minutes of this game, and Kansas was already in control by that point. They got out and ran early, and the game was pretty much over. When you get into a choppy game like that with a bunch of free throws, it's just not going to end well for the team that's behind. And K-State even shot it really well. They're 31 for 36. Mm-hmm.
They were better than Kansas at the free throw line. And I didn't want to say it either, because it feels like we've had two different Big 12 games throughout the year, right? We've had games where it's been a lot of foul shooting, or it's been pretty medium, not a lot, enough, I would say. And teams have gotten out and ran, and you've seen, you know, high scores, K-State in a couple of those games, as well as Kansas in a couple of those games. I don't know if it changes the way that I feel about either team. I think that KU's still fine. I think it gives me some confidence and a little bit more comfort if I'm a KU fan. K-State, you were due to drop a game on the road. They haven't been great in conference. It doesn't change your outlook. You already have one win over Texas. If you're able to beat Texas again, which that game coming up looks very, very big now for Kansas State.
Yes. And they get them at home.
And I think that, you know, you still have hope that out there that you can at least win the conference and take care of business that way. Is Texas really, we're at a point where we're saying Texas without Chris Beard can win the Big 12 now? They're the only team with seven wins. You've got a four-way tie for second. TCU starting to sneak their way into the conversation. They don't have the tiebreakers as well as Iowa State, K-State,
right,
or Kansas do over some of the bigger teams. But you're looking at a couple of teams that could get up there. But at Texas right now, the top dog at 7-2.
Yeah, and I think the Baylor win says a lot about where they were at. And I know it was a five-point win, it was a close game and stuff, and part of that's just being at home. But I still think, and I know Baylor has really struggled, and again, a lot of people have pushed off Baylor into the corner because they lost their first three conference games. That is something that, in my opinion, is just a big old mistake, because Baylor's going to make some noise in the tournament. I think when they get to the NCAA tournament, they maybe even make some noise in the Big 12 tournament, because they're basically they're out of the margin for error in the Big 12. So going forward, this in the regular season anyway, they basically maybe have one more loss to have a legit shot to win the league. They got four losses already. So they're prepping for the Big 12 tournament and just playing for NCAA tournament seeding at this point. And, you know, it's a team that you just don't want to play. I'm scared of playing Baylor. There's just, if I'm any team in the Big 12, you do not want to play them. But I think Texas is kind of becoming that team. We'll say, I think Texas is certainly where a lot of folks would have said, hey, maybe this is a Final Four team. Maybe not, because they go on the road and they pretty much get dominated at Tennessee last week. And Tennessee might be the best team in the country. They're one of the best, if not. I mean, they are very much a Final Four team that could make the Final Four. So until you can go play those teams and prove that you can compete with them, you're probably a step off of that, but they may be the best in the Big 12 right there with Kansas.
Yeah, trying to look around here and look at this Big 12 race. What we do have right now, let me get to the Big 12 here. Let me do my best to navigate the Ken Pomeroy, my handy-dandy Ken Pomeroy.
There's four teams tied at 6-3, so you've just got a jumbled mess at the top.
Yeah, it's a complete mess. Obviously, Texas there at 7-2. Projected Texas is projected right now to win in Ken Pom, and top 10 team in Ken Pom.
You're probably, and if they do that, if they pull it out, I mean, the winner of this league, unless it's Kansas, is probably looking at a 2 seed, maybe a 1 seed. I mean, you could make an argument for it given all the strength of schedule.
Without conference play, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or excuse me, conference tournament play. Yeah.
Sure.
Barring anything that changes in that, I would say so too. I don't know. The Big 12. I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. Here's what I'm going to say. This Big 12 has been so competitive, so good, and so deep. What I worry is we get to the NCAA tournament and they fall flat.
Well, okay. This is the Big 10 effect. Because
that's what I'm worried about. Yeah, no, that's what I'm worried about.
Here's the thing. The Big 10, part of it, though, I think is, and there has been a change. I will point out, like, the Big 10, and the Big 12 can relate to this in some ways. But the Big Ten has always been the conference that doesn't call fouls, and they let teams grind it out and be way, way too physical in the regular season. I'm telling you, and of course, you know, I got to watch this conference in person for 4 years, everywhere across the league, and you just see guys get worn down over the course of a season, the physicality level that's allowed to go on. I'm serious. Like, and just for an aside, I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe it was last year, Illinois is playing Indiana at Assembly Hall. And Indiana brings in Mike Durr, this big guy who's 7 foot tall and slow, and he transferred in from UCF, and he didn't really do anything for Indiana, but he was big body, and they were playing Illinois when they had Kofi. And, I mean, I'm telling you, he puts two forearms on his back, roots him out three times, and then Kofi lowers his shoulder, probably picks up an offensive foul in most leagues, gets a layup, and they don't call a foul either way. And that is Big Ten basketball. And then they get to the tournament and they try to do that, and as soon as you put two hands on, it gets called by every other conference. So they have, number one, it's the officiating, and it's been different this year because it feels like it's one end of the other, kind of like the Big 12, mm-hmm. where some games have been a Razor ton of tight. Fouls and sometimes have been, some games have been completely free and open. But the second thing is, it does take a toll on your health. And any time when you play in a league, you can call them battle-tested, say whatever you want. When you get into the tournament, but teams that are going to be primed for a run are teams like Alabama, teams like Houston, teams like Arizona. Those are the teams that always seemingly, that maybe aren't always the best in the regular season because they don't play the best competition, but they always make runs in the tournament because they've got some juice left in the tank. And to win this conference, you've got to put everything out there. There are no off games. We saw Texas Tech beat Iowa State the other night, and they were down 23 for crying out loud. Like, it wasn't even... You couldn't even mail it in for half a game. There's just no breaks in this league, and I think it takes a toll in the NCAA tournament more than likely. It's sad for the Big 12, but it's certainly not the first time we've seen that in the Big 12, the Big 10, and I think those two conferences have certainly separated themselves from the rest of the pack, not only this year, but really for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, you got to try to avoid that pitfall. Let's play a fun game here.
Let's do it.
And this is if these teams pick a Big 12 team. I've got one. You can probably see it on my screen, maybe, that I think could make a surprise Sweet 16 run type of thing that's not maybe in that top four spot of the Big 12. I'm going to roll with West Virginia here.
Okay.
I like what they've been doing. The analytics like them a lot. They're top 20 in KenPom. Will they get in the tournament? Probably need some help with that record
they
right
do.
Now at 13-9. They can certainly pick up plenty of good wins.
It's hilarious, too, because they are top 20 in KenPom.
The top 20. They've been right around that number the entire season. They've got Oklahoma coming up at home and Iowa State at home. Both two games are projected to win. I like the way West Virginia's been playing as a team that nobody's really talking about, kind of on that back end there where you've seen the top teams really go all out. West Virginia's had to play competitive every single night. They do have non-con losses to Xavier, which is a pretty good non-con loss, and Purdue, very good non-con loss. I don't know. West Virginia, just kind of off the top of my head, a team that maybe could surprise some folks. You see the name, you see the record, and then all of a sudden they do, you know, they kind of go against what we're saying about the Big 12 struggling, and maybe they make a run of the Sweet 16 the second weekend.
Well, I guess this team isn't technically in the top four in the conference, but I already talked about Baylor. I think they're the team. I mean, they're 5-4 in conference play. Let's look at their losses. They had the surprising loss to Iowa State on New Year's Eve to open up conference play. Then they have a one-point loss against TCU, overtime loss to K-State, where K-State shot the lights out in that game, and a five-point loss on the road at Texas. They have great wins over Kansas, good win over West Virginia, very nice-looking win over Arkansas, who is a totally underrated team, and that's another team that may make a run in the NCAA tournament. Like, Baylor's the team. And I know they're still, in Bracket Matrix, as it was updated yesterday, Baylor is still projected to be a three seed, which is amazing. And I'm just, you know, that's the kind of year the Big 12 is having. But even if they drop a seed line or two, that again, that's just, that's a scary team to play in the tournament. If you come out on Selection Sunday and your favorite team is lined up and you're not from the Big 12 and you're lined up to see them in the second round, ouch. Like, that I'm sorry for you, because that's just, in my opinion, I think Baylor's got a chance to make it to, at the very least, the second weekend, maybe to the Final Four. So they're that good. Scott Drew's that good a coach. He's been there before. Understand what it takes to get there. And their offense is good. And when your offense is good, sometimes that can carry you in the tournament. They are very, very long. They are really difficult to stop inside. And then just when you think you've got everything covered, they shoot at almost 36% from three. So they're a solid team, well-rounded. I think they have the chance to get hot in the Big 12. And again, there's plenty of other teams, though, as you mentioned. If West Virginia gets in, you know, what if Oklahoma makes a surprise run? They could get in. I mean, they've got the resume.
Alabama.
Yes. I mean, all these, you could make an argument for everybody outside of Texas Tech. And they're probably going to get to the NIT, assuming that they finish the year with a winning record. And maybe they win the NIT. Who knows? Like, I just say it. Like, it's just, everything's possible for this league.
A lot to like from the Big 12. We're going to go down to jump down a level to prep basketball, look at the high school basketball ranks real quick before we jump into our first segment, or our first segment break, I should say. We'll have Adam Kadavy on the other end of that. First of all, last night, Huguetin sweeping Holcomb. The girls won 49-45 over the boys, and then the Longhorns and Eagles tied up heading into overtime for the second overtime period. 68-62, Huguetin hangs on and wins, and Derek, well, wait to talk about that Scott City and Hayes game with Adam when he joins us here in the next segment, but let's talk about this Garden City-Dodge City matchup last night. We weren't too far off on our predictions, honestly. I mean, we were right there. I think we had talked quite a bit about how we figured the girls' game would be a little bit more competitive than the two games between the boys and the girls. Certainly felt that. Becca Unruh, you've been warning me for some time, you know, what she was able to do and her capabilities, and she just absolutely exploded last night.
Yeah, she had 26. She was 7 of 8 from 3, 8 of 12 overall from the field, and she did not score, so she had 21 points in the first half. And for those that were not listening or watching, she made her first six threes of the game. Unbelievable.
And a couple of them were unguarded, right? But for the most, I'd say four of the six were probably with a defender with a hand in her face or pretty close.
Agreed.
To.
And then in the second half, Jacob Miller completely took away those open threes. Mm-hmm. She got one shot off before the final minute of the fourth quarter. And Garden City comes back and makes a bunch of threes in the last quarter. They make some plays. Dodge City's offense goes cold because when Unruh is out of it, they struggle to find that next piece. We saw Ashlyn Lembright step up for 7 points in the third quarter last night. And Aisha Potts got a couple of buckets underneath. So that's, and you know, speaking about Potts, like, you could see flashes in that game of trying to get more aggressive. It's just not quite in her personality. She's a junior, so she's got one more year, and she's going to be important to the team next year. But she's the type of player that can stretch the floor. She plays on the perimeter a lot and then can catch it at the foul line and get downhill in a hurry because she's got a quick first step, draw that contact, and we kind of saw that on display. But anyway, you get down to the last minute, things have completely turned. I mean, you're thinking Garden City's in great shape here. They're up two with 30 seconds left, and it's as simple as a catch and shoot on an inbound, fading away into double team, and Unruh cans a three. I mean, just amazing shot by Becca Unruh last night. And then after the questionable intentional foul call, I asked Coach Snodgrass about that after the game. We were all kind of on the same page. We talked about it between games. Felt like it was a basketball play and really hard luck. And it did change the game a little bit because Dodge got the ball. They only made one of those free throws, but then they got the ball. So if they do that the first time, then, you know, they get the ball when they're down two instead of four. But then they have to foul again. Garden has to foul again, and Unruh steps to the stripe and calmly sinks two free throws, and that's that. And Dodge escapes with the win after blowing a 16-point lead.
You talk about that intentional foul, and what the play was, you know, Garden City goes down, it's tied at that point. No. Down would have been one at that point.
They were down one.
Down one at that point.
I think they had just gotten a bucket.
46-45. That was after the Unruh three. Garden City goes down, I believe.
Misses a shot. Right.
Dodge City rebounds. And then kind of a just circus-type play. It was a direct line pass. I mean, almost from, you know, Garden City's baseline underneath their basket straight to midcourt. Tiesha Potts, who caught it, then fumbled it a little bit just because it was so hot. Eileen Besserell comes across the middle of the court going after the basketball. Collision.
Oh, my goodness.
Eileen, you're talking 5'10 on 5'10 crime. 5'10 on 5'11 crime. I mean, bigger players out there on the court when you're talking girls' basketball as far as height. And Eileen Besserell, she doesn't mess around, right? She fouls hard. When she fouls, she gets her money's worth every single time. And it was, but more so a basketball play, I think, in that situation.
Oh, totally agree.
They're both going for the ball. Loose ball, they call an intentional foul. And I would have really liked to see a situation in which Garden City had a chance to win, Dodge had a chance to defend. Either way,
right.
1-for-2 for Potts. We talk about Unruh going down and cashing those two free throws. Great performance for Dodge City. It was nice to see Garden City as well get back to near 50 points. They're a much better team when they're scoring the ball.
That game was really fun to watch.
It was a great game.
I mean,
great game.
There were probably a few more turnovers than both teams would have liked, but it was. I mean, both teams made 9 threes. Like, Dodge was 9 for 15 from the three-point line. Like, that's
Garden
amazing.
Had 10.
Yeah, and both these teams are sub 30% on the year. Yeah. So just an impressive game to watch. I will say, that is one of the best collisions that I've seen in a long time. Like, perfect, clean football hit or hockey hit. Like, it was just shoulder to shoulder. And, I mean, she hit the deck. And then, you know, she's Potts is a strong kid. She bounced back up. She was totally fine. She made the free throw, one of the free throws. And, you know, she hit the floor and, like, everybody kind of freaked out for a minute. And it's like, whoa, what do we do? And I never even really saw the intentional foul. Like, she starts walking to the line, and I see Jacob Miller complaining. That's how I kind of figured out, okay, they called an intentional foul. So, crazy, crazy finish to that
one. I saw the X come up right away, and I was like, I knew it was coming. You could just feel, like, in that moment that's kind of where the officials were leaning. But totally okay. You know, a competitive game. These two teams will see each other again.
And a couple of weeks.
It felt like a game that both teams needed, and I think that was a really a nice thing for both Dodge City and Garden City, despite the loss for Garden City. Last game was the boys' game. Derek, you weren't too confident coming into this one. Thought maybe Garden City would be able to do well what they did. Run the gym offensively, and Dodge didn't play terrible either.
No.
I mean, didn't turn the ball over, took care of the basketball, made some plays early in the game, and then just could not keep up with the firepower of Garden City. We haven't seen a game like that from Garden City, I would argue, since January 10th against Liberal. I mean, they've been in tight games, Sunrise Christian Academy, Wichita Northwest, Wichita Heights, obviously. Goodland gave them a scare a week ago, yesterday, and it felt like a game Garden City really, really needed. And unfortunately, it comes to the hands of Dodge City, who's had their own set of struggles, but just not enough firepower, I thought, overall.
Yeah, and you're right. I thought this game, again, was clean. It was easy to watch. There wasn't a million fouls in this one. I mean, two teams combined to shoot 14 free throws.
Was there 8 fouls?
Let's look back. There were.
That first half seemed like.
Okay, so there were a bunch in the second half.
Yeah,
the third quarter kind of got ugly, and then the fourth quarter was running clock. But, I think there were like 4 or 5 fouls in the first half.
Didn't feel like very many.
Crazy. But no, you're right. I felt like that's probably a middle of the pack game that Dodge has played this year. I mean, and I know Shane Trauber was upset and, you know, disappointed in the effort and all that coming on the road and expected to be a more competitive game. I just think Garden City is that much ahead of where Dodge is at. The athletes are, they're just bigger. I mean, Garden City has the bigger players. Like, I know, and he mentioned that in the postgame too. He's like, hey, you know, we can't make excuses saying, well, they're bigger, they're stronger. Like, Dodge rebounded horribly last night. It was 41-20 on the boards. Garden completely dominated at 11 offensive rebounds in the first half, and that's been a huge problem. Dodge gave up 21 of those against Great Bend last Friday. You just cannot do that and give teams second and third opportunities. And he kind of sarcastically mentioned that, too, in the postgame. He's like, hey, it's hard for our confidence level to know that we're going to get one shot, and then we're going to go down and we have to stop them three times. Like, that's not an easy thing to do as a basketball team. But, no, I think there's some building blocks here for Dodge. They had small stretches in the game where they were able to run some offense. I mean, they got some easy buckets. There was a really good pass from Isaiah Taylor close to half court where he put some English on it. Like, with one hand, it was an NBA type of pass. Like, you can see the vision there. It's just a matter of bringing it all together. And I think Garden City's just a step ahead of where they're at. But if Dodge can put games like that together consistently, then they'll be competitive with the bulk of their schedule throughout the rest of the year.